And did you see the feature story we have posted at coasttocoastam.com, where a couple in Argentina claims that they saw an animal being abducted by a UFO? They claim it was a cow, and you can see what could be the cow floating up into the air being taken by some kind of an object. It's a bizarre photograph. And also, we should have up shortly our Digicam picture of John Fogerty and producer Tom Danheiser back there in the L.A. studios. So Sean will get that up for you, and you can find that at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and let's go to the phones and also the life-changing, life-altering hotline for you, which is 818-817-0021. Let's go to our first-time caller in Redlands, California. Jeff is with us. Hey, Jeff, thanks for holding.
Well, thank you. Thank you, George. Good morning.
Yes, morning to you, too.
Yeah, we had some weird things happen when I was a kid back in the mid-'80s in the Kansas City area. We had bought a house out there, and a long story short, we didn't find out until we were adults as kids, but our parents bought a house that was owned by people. The house had pentagrams and all kinds of in the house that we did not know about. Of course, they covered it all up, and we never heard anything about it. But we had a Ouija board 2 years in. Nothing happened the first 2 years that we lived there. But we had a Ouija board, and after that, the last 2 years that we lived in the house, all kinds of bizarre things happened. And I'll just tell you real quick about two quick things. I was doing dishes in our kitchen, and to the left, we had a back room where our laundry room was. And I was doing dishes, and all of a sudden, I was looking to my left out of the corner of my eye. Our whole back room just lit up, almost like the sun was stuck in our back room there. No noise. No explosion or nothing like that. And then all of a sudden, this all I could describe as maybe a plasma type of thing about a foot wide, it crawled along the top of our ceiling, along the edge of our wall, around the whole room, and even jumped across a doorway where my sister was actually walking through. My older sister was walking through a doorway. And I've never heard of anything like that before. The whole neighborhood's power went out after this happened. It was kind of pointy at the end, almost like a lightning bolt in a way. And then it just disappeared. But it crawled around the ceiling, all the way around the room in the kitchen area. And then just our power went out. The whole neighborhood's power went out. Never were able to explain exactly. I don't know if you've ever heard of anything like that.
That's weird. It's almost as if some form of live consciousness was surrounding you. You know what?
Yeah, and just one more thing. We took a picture one time, and just a normal picture. My mom was in the living room, and we had a photo of her, of a side view of her, you know, with the wall in our living room in the background.
Yeah.
Just a normal picture. And we had all kind of witnesses. My uncle lived there with us at the time also, and so my adult family, my mom saw this picture. One minute she looks absolutely normal. She had long brown hair. At the time, she was in her mid-30s and looked normal. Next minute, you could blink your eyes and look at this photo, and her whole body contorted. Her hair, almost like what I could describe out of an old Wizard of Oz, the witch. Her hair got real weird. Her hands got all knotted and long. Her eyebrows got huge and thick, covered her eyes even. And I was crying. I was like 12 at the time, and I've never seen anything like that. And again, there's just a couple things of the many things, but it just seemed like ever since we got that Ouija board, I don't know if we opened up something, but I would recommend anybody to stay away from those, that kind of thing. It's a portal for something, and it's not good. From our experience anyway.
I hear you, Jeff. It is a portal for something. Murfreesboro, Tennessee, we go. It's Dale's turn. Good morning, Dale.
Hey, good morning, George. How are you doing today?
Good.
Hey, this is kind of a life-changing story. I forgot what the number was earlier. You and your program have changed my life.
We have?
Yes, you have.
What happened? How have we done this?
Well, I started working nights about maybe almost a year ago. And I'm 57 years old, and I'm kind of set in my ways. You've heard the old saying about teaching old dog new tricks. Well, I never was politically inclined. But when you had G. Edward Griffin on, I mean, that man opened up a freaking new world for me.
Yeah, he talked about the Federal Reserve, and he was great.
Yeah, well, not so much the Federal Reserve, but I got on his website and learned what's really going on with the ultra elite and what's been for the last 100 years, how our history has been rewritten.
Yep.
How, I mean, how these ultra rich are controlling Obama. And I mean, since he's been elected, this country and our society has gone down the tubes in a horrible way. And I'm not picking on him because he's African American or anything else. It's just that he seems to be a puppet, especially now with this the Nobel Prize. For what? Hello?
I know. It baffles me. You know, what's disappointing is, you know, elected by a lot of people who wanted change. And, you know, I wanted change, too. I don't vote for president because I like to go on the air as impartial as I can. But, you know, he was elected. People wanted him in. They wanted change. And, you know, there was such an anti-Bush vote that fell on McCain, who's a nice guy, good guy. But, you know, Barack Obama won. But I've got to tell you, I'm not happy with the way they are trying to solve the economic mess we're in. And I don't like all these czars. I think that's just a waste. I think government is infringing way too much on our rights, and I'm disappointed. I will just say that. And the popularity polls, you know, hear that out as well.
Well, you know, what do they have in Russia? They have czars, okay? Let's think about this correlation for a second. And, I mean, it's just like
He's got 3 more years to change it, to pull it out.
Oh, God.
And see if he can turn it around. Yeah, he's got to do that and see if we can pull it around, and we'll see what happens. I got into a discussion with a friend of mine here in St. Louis about the birth certificate, and that I still think will be an issue coming up in 2012, and we'll see what happens there. It can't be an issue now. It's too late. But that's going to be a major issue again as well, and that will be candidates who come straight out and say, "Here is my certified copy, not what we post on the internet, nothing like that. Here it is, filed with the Election Commission, and there it is." That's going to change the way things are because prior to that, nobody had to do that. Let's go to Amarillo, Texas. Lynn, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Lynn.
Good morning, George.
Morning.
I called and talked to you. You were in Washington, D.C. I think it was like in June or July.
I was in D.C. in, was it April?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Might have been April. I was at the Expo conference.
Right.
Okay.
Anyway, that was my first time I've called. And they tell me I couldn't chit-chat because you had a guest, but one of my questions I wanted to ask you that evening was, did you ever hear when you were a kid or watch, it came on in about 1960, I'm thinking, I was about 10 years old, and it was called The Joe Pyne Show.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Wow, I haven't been able to find anybody that could remember it. And it reminds me a lot of Coast to Coast because I can remember it was on a Saturday, usually on a Saturday night, I think, or maybe Friday night.
And Joe also used to write a column. He wrote a syndicated column that was picked up, I believe, in the Detroit Free Press at the time.
Well, you know, there was a lot people thought that was a crazy show because there would be people on that had been abducted and stuff like that. Do you remember that?
Well, I was pretty young, but I mean, I know about him because, you know, I went through school studying radio and TV and some of the giants of the industry.
Do you know if he's still around? I guess he may be 100 years old by now.
He died in 1970.
Oh, okay. Also, another thing, you've put it on a couple of times, and it's a man observing some women that are beating this man up. Do you know?
Oh, yes. That's that funny thing that I play every once in a while.
Yeah. Yes, I love it. Is there any way to get a copy of that? That makes me laugh.
I think we had it posted on the website a couple times, and they normally put it up after I play it. I play it like twice a year. It's one of the funniest things I've ever heard.
I love it.
That guy's laugh is infectious.
It is. It makes you laugh. It's really good. I love it. I would like to request hearing that again. And also, is there any information on Albuquerque as far as about?
Yes. You mean my event?
Yes.
Yeah, all you have to do is go to coasttocoastam.com. On the left, down by the bottom, there's a segment that says George's calendar schedule.
Yes. I went there, and it says TBA.
Well, the Albuquerque thing should be up now.
Okay.
It should be there.
All right.
Just click that, and it's for KKOB. And the event is, though I'm going to do a live broadcast Friday night, the event is on Saturday.
Okay, great. All righty. One other thing. I enjoy your stories, too. They're so funny. The one you told that night about stepping on the gerbil or the hamster, the baby.
My father, when he stepped on a baby hamster. Oh, God. You of all the stories I've said, that one you liked?
Yes, it was really funny. It was a funny story. I could just see him smashing that little gerbil.
Did you hear the story about when I was dating a few years ago about my dissecting kit? Did you hear that one?
No, I haven't heard that one.
Okay, you're going to have, I can't repeat it again, but I lost a date because of a dissecting kit.
Okay. Well, so on the other story, can I just go on the computer and will it be on, could I hear it again that way?
No, I've got to play it again when I do, and it's not due yet for, I try to spread it out. It's probably a couple more months away.
Okay, well, I'll listen for it.
Keep listening. All right, thanks a lot, Lynn. Next up, we go to Medford, Oregon. Anthony, it's your turn. Hey, Anthony.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Just wanted to say I really enjoy the show, and I have a short story for you.
Thank you. Sure thing. Go ahead.
When I'm driving home from work one night, I used to work at Taco Bell, and I used to be a manager there. I was taking the deposit to the bank, and on my way back, I took this road called Foothills, which is kind of a back road. And when I'm turning onto Quarry Road, which is about a mile from my house, about 20 feet in front of me, I have to really slam on my brakes in order not to hit this thing. I can only explain it as something that looks like a German Shepherd, but I was driving a 1992 Ford Mustang, and it was about a foot taller than my car, and had very shaggy fur all around it. Very elongated snout and really yellow eyes, really amber eyes.
Jeez. Now, was it up on twos or on all fours?
It was on all fours.
Okay.
And it was taller than my car already. And it just stops right in the road and just looks at me. And I'm just looking at it for a second. It's like, I hear a lot of people say, like, oh, in that situation, I would freak out, you know, but you're actually very calm. You know, I was only able to stare at it. I wasn't able to do anything else.
Had you ever seen an animal like that before?
I have never seen anything like that ever. I don't even think wolves come around here.
Did it have like an opossum head? You know how they had that pointy look?
Yeah, it was an elongated snout. It didn't look like a dog or anything I'd ever seen before, even in pictures.
Man, I got to tell you, Anthony, there are so many weird creatures out there that we haven't discovered. Beyond what Bigfoot might be. I mean, what was it? Just last week, they found about 130 more species of animals that they never knew of in Indonesia. Frogs, mice, things like that. There's got to be huge creatures out there that we haven't found. This is a big planet. Punta Gorda, Florida. It's east of the Rockies. Good morning, Tim. You're up.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Okay.
George, I wanted to thank you for having this show where people can call in and say what they need to say.
Okay.
And on your show, you hear a lot of commercials for diabetes. And I wanted to tell you about a life-altering thing that happened to me.
What happened?
Well, A lot of times you hear, you know, the commercials where a diabetic will come on and say, geez, you know, control your sugar or you'll go blind, or you could have a heart attack or a stroke, and they're on your show. Because of my type of diabetes, which is one of the rare 2% that are extreme brittle, my blood sugar can run anywhere between 40, and the highest that I ever got and managed to keep conscious was 1,275.
What?
It should have killed you.
10 times over?
Yep. It should have killed me, but it did not. But because my diabetes runs in these streaks and that it, they cannot even control it in the hospital, I eventually lost my sight. Now, I don't want the world to feel sorry for me or boo-hoo for me. I do have 3 colors left that I can see, but I have something called diabetic retinopathy and wet macular degeneration, which had nothing to do with diabetes.
Right. You just happen to have that.
But I've been in hospital several times, and they can't even get it under control. But what happened to me was one of the greatest things. Our county in Ponte Gorda has something called VIP. That stands for visually impaired persons.
Okay.
They took a guy who went from sighted enough to be a drag racer, car builder, owner, and the whole shot, to a guy that couldn't see 4 feet in front of him, and brought out the independence in me to be able to do things like laundry, like cleaning the house. And you may think these things aren't important.
We take it for granted, those of us who still have our vision. You're right.
And they, over a course of probably 8 weeks, I'm not sure exactly, they did everything with us. They talked about how to do this and how to do that. And I went from a person that was basically trapped inside a home, because a home can become a prison very quickly.
Absolutely.
When you can't see.
Yeah.
And it's always hard to, you know, get rides and stuff. You just appreciate that kind of a service for somebody like me. They did everything from getting me, teaching me how to dial a phone. Believe it or not, there's several buttons on today's phones. And that's how I call your show. I've called your show very many times now, and I enjoy talking. I have some questions. I just wish some of the authors, I wish I could read a book.
Well, some of them have books on tape.
Some, but very few.
And most of them don't have books on Braille. You know, can you read Braille?
No, because this came on.
And, before you learned this stuff.
Before
right.
I could learn it, because, like I said, the commercials I used to think were, well, let's face it, I used to think they were funny. I'd look at them and say, oh, yeah, you know, actor.
Not me, right?
Yeah, that's never me.
Well, Tim, I'm glad you're getting along okay. I'll be back in a moment. Talk a little bit about the Knights Templar on Coast to Coast AM. Great series of programs for you next week, by the way. I might be, by the way, on assignment on Monday. I'm not sure yet. I may have Ian fill in for me on Monday. Tuesday, Jerome Corsi joins us. America for Sale, his new work. Fascinating program. Wednesday, John Major Jenkins joins us as we talk about his new work for 2012. Thursday, Dr. Richard Bartlett joins us as we talk about how he believes the physics of miracles occur. And then we're back to open lines again on Coast to Coast AM. The Knights Templar, by the way, conducted excavations at the temple during the First Crusades and became a very powerful knightly order. I had a chance to talk with Lawrence Gardner, historian, who helped trace the connections between King Solomon and his temple
and the Knights Templar. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.
Go back, Lawrence, if we can, to the period of King Solomon. And we've heard so much about King Solomon's treasure in the first movie, National Treasure, with Nicolas Cage. We saw, of course, the fictional Solomon's treasure hidden away. Let's go back to that era, if we can, and if you would just tell us a little bit about this king, what happened to him, what happened to the treasure?
Yes, well, forgetting Nicolas Cage, of course.
Yeah.
And who knows, there still might be some treasure out there for Nicolas Cage to find. You know, one doesn't know that. I mean, the importance of King Solomon seems to be that in biblical terms, you know, once the kingship of Judah and Israel had begun under King David, and we're looking at about 1000 BC, that sort of period, that Solomon seems to be one of the most written about. And remember, all the writings about the kings were done in retrospect and in hindsight, you know, some long time afterwards, 200 years afterwards. But they sort of settled on King Solomon as being something really, really special. And we really only got the Bible to go on here. There's not a lot about King Solomon outside the Bible which doesn't use it as a base for its information. So, you know, we don't know what the ultimate truths and strengths of it all are, but he became famed in the first place because he built the first temple of Jerusalem, and I suppose that was the sort of main claim to fame. But what did seem to happen was that from being the son of a king who was a warlord, I suppose David was a military leader, essentially, Solomon seemed to establish a basis for what became known as kingship. And so he wasn't a great warrior, it didn't seem. He became a judicial type of king, but he was enormously wealthy. Enormously. I mean, when one reads through what is said about his wealth, I mean, the amount of gold that he seemed to have was incredible.
How did he amass that, Lord?
Well, it's impossible to know. I mean, we have stories and things like King Solomon's mines that come off of it, postulating theories. We know that certain kings of other regions were supplying Solomon with a lot of things, with ships, with chariots, with horses.
Were they buying him off? Were they afraid of him?
Well, no. I mean, it seemed to be in exchange for this sort of knowledge and judgmental quality that he had. And clearly what he was doing, I mean, and this is probably the real basis of it, that this land of Canaan, as it used to be, had sort of become consolidated under him. And it's a pretty large, you know, tract of land within that region. It sort of sat then with Phoenicia up on the coast and the Jordan lands down below and whatever, and he was hanging and holding it all together. And this clearly was very, very valuable for the kings of the surrounding countries. And so money and supplies were coming into him from Jordan, from Phoenicia, from the Yemen, various places. Even the Queen of Sheba said to have come and brought him a camel train with all sorts of goodies and spices and, again, gold. And the whole thing seems to center on gold. There was a heck of a lot of gold coming in. And the temple itself, when you read the descriptions of it, and again, we don't know how real these are, but you know, just a few hundred years after his time, it was being written that just about everything in the damn place was covered in gold, you know, and even the shields on the walls were made of gold. And so what we actually have here is a king who, whether in reality or whether simply in terms of boosting him historically, was very famous, very rich, and judgmentally quite a brilliant king, it seems. The big problem that he had in terms of biblical law, of course, was that what he did was to to upset the religious establishment
right.
quite a lot, because he had loads of wives, apparently. They all belonged to tribes that had different gods and goddesses. So you know, he didn't really sort of hook into the one god thing that the Bible story is about. And that got him a bit of a bad name, but it also made him very fascinating. And you know, as rebels do in history, you know, that people sort of latch onto them. And from then on, you know, going down through history, he seems to have been looked upon as some sort of a model of kingship. And, you know, one can move into France in the Middle Ages, you know, right up to that time. And they're still talking about trying to make their kingship like that of King Solomon. When we study documents of the Scientific Royal Society in Britain here, Isaac Newton wrote in the late 1600s that he felt that in terms of acquisition of knowledge, that we were all living in the shadow of Solomon. And that's why I called my book The Shadow of Solomon. It came from Isaac Newton.
When the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, didn't they have some reference to King Solomon in some incredible treasure that it didn't go into, but it did speculate on the fact that there was something massive tucked away somewhere?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This comes up time after time, and it's what the legends are based on. And maybe they're not legendary. Maybe there is a great treasure out there somewhere. Who knows? I don't know how many people have ever looked for it, or if they would know where to look for it. But quite frankly, you know, if he did have a treasure, it would seem to me that it probably wasn't very far from him. And I mean, he had the Temple of Jerusalem. He had all of the underground vaults there. Now, in the 1870s, engineers from Britain and the Palestine Exploration Fund dug down into those vaults, and they found all sorts of bits and pieces and interesting things. But what they found quite fascinating was that they found quite a few Templar items, broken Templar swords, broken Templar crosses, things like that, from the Middle Ages. So what they knew at that time was that these vaults had been excavated before. And history has always said, and it's been regarded as legendary by some, but one way or another, the stories have always been there about how the Templars, whilst they were in Jerusalem, soon after they were founded, in fact, in the very early 1100s, they were digging away beneath the Temple Mount. And once they left Jerusalem in 1127, and were called back to Europe, Bernard de Clairvaux, the abbot, the Cistercian abbot, who was their patron and protector, had to get armies to ride with them through Europe. And in fact, what he said was that it was to make sure that the ecclesiastical bodies got nowhere near what they were carrying. So clearly what they were bringing back was something pretty important, something very valuable, that the Pope and the Church would have been after at the time.
Could it have been the Ark of the Covenant?
Well, yes, it could have been. I mean, it could have been all sorts of things. And in fact, the Ark does come up once or twice in Templar history once they're back in France, certainly in relation to Chartres Cathedral.
What happened? Let's go back to Solomon for a moment. What happened to him?
He died.
I mean, did he get wiped out by someone else?
No, he died. You know, he lived a long time, and he reigned for 40 years, the Bible tells us. But on the other hand, it tells us that just about everybody reigned for 40 years. It was the standard.
It also rained for 40
years.
Well,
it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't really a length of rain. It was actually the generational standard. 40 years was reckoned to be the generation,
the term, right?
Between a father and his son. I mean, I think the age now is about 30 for generational standards, but it was 40 years then for kingly dynasties. And so it was always reckoned that the son would be born when the father was 40, and whether the father was still reigning or not, that's when the son would effectively become king. So everybody seemed to reign for 40 years. But no, he died in the end. I mean, there was no big deal about it. It was nothing special. And he didn't seem to get very involved in battles or anything of that sort. He just liked his women and his fineries and his luxuries and ruled his kingdom with an iron fist, it would seem, but was seemingly liked by the majority.
The Templars, the Freemasons, were they set up because of Solomon's treasure, or were they set up for other reasons, Lawrence?
Well, I suppose we have to begin with the Templars, because they were much earlier than Freemasons. Mm-hmm. What actually happened was that when the Crusaders were out in Jerusalem at the end of the 1000s, from about 1096, they were being led by a guy called Godfrey de Bouillon, who established out there quite quickly various knightly orders. One of them being the Order of the Temple of Jerusalem. And so the Templar beginnings were quite early, around about 1100, that sort of time. They were set up within Jerusalem. They grew quite quickly in number, but to start with, there probably weren't too many. And history tells us that they were established for no other purpose but to protect the roads for the pilgrims and that sort of
sure.
thing.
They were soldiers in the beginning, right?
Oh, well, they were nobility,
yeah.
Rather than soldiers. I mean, they became soldiers, and I guess the nobility...
They were armed, they had swords.
Men, but they were armed, they were a military unit.
Yes.
But essentially what happened was that they were formed really more as a sort of ambassadorial team to begin. A lot of very strange things were going on out there at the time, and you know, people were being slaughtered in the streets, and nobody really knew who was who. You know, there were Jews there were Christians there were Muslims there, and they'd all been living, you know, pretty well together until a whole load of different sort of Muslims came in from Turkey and took over the whole thing, and basically the Crusades were out there to make sure that Jerusalem was taken back from these Turks, but not necessarily from the Muslims, because the Muslims that have been living there before had been doing so quite peacefully and there was no problem. But what happened, of course, was that the Crusaders didn't have a clue who was who. They didn't know one Muslim from another. They didn't
right.
know who was from that country, who was from Iraq, who was from Egypt, who was from Turkey. And so it kind of went wrong, and there was a lot of unnecessary slaughter going on and whatever. And so the Templars in the first instance appeared to be a sort of diplomatic unit that were trying to be diplomats in this environment, negotiating between the various leaders and this sort of thing. However, it didn't take very long after the death of Godfrey de Bouillon, and King Baldwin took the throne in Jerusalem, when the Templars were actually set up in effectively what had been the headquarters of the king at that time. And he moved off into the place which is the Rock of David now, with the big dome on it. So he left them in this place which was effectively the palace.
Yeah, how many do you think were there? 100? 1,000?
Do
we know?
It's not possible to say. I mean, I think we're talking about a couple of dozen, something like that.
That's
probably.
All?
Okay. I think so at that stage. I mean, there's no indication that there were loads and loads of them, because when they came back to Europe, they had to have an army to protect them. So they clearly weren't that big as a military number. But what happened was that they were left there in this palace, which was on the site of the old temple. And we're looking at that date, round about 1118. And they then spent from that date until 1127 seemingly doing nothing much else but digging. Their whole job seemed to be to stay there in this place where they were quartered, and just to keep digging and excavating.
And they were doing all the work, or they had helpers?
Well, clearly they had helpers and people that came in, but I mean, they were doing the work. I mean,
right.
That's the way it reads.
And where did the Templars come from? I mean, were they Arabs?
No, they were Flemish and French mainly.
Okay.
Yeah, mainly French mainly, and some from Flanders in there as well. But they were basically nobility. People related to one another by different birth strains, some church-based people. I mean, in those times, the key abbots, they were linked up entirely to the Cistercian order.
They must have thought that they got the short end of the stick if they got pushed out to that the area of the world instead of staying in France or England or...
Well, I mean, the whole crusade was based on the knights and the nobility going out to lead these crusades.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when that lot had finished, out when King Richard of England started his crusade later on, you know, everybody wanted to be in on it. Everybody wanted to win Jerusalem for the Christians by then. But to start with, the First Crusade wasn't about winning it for the Christians. It was simply about getting these invaders out of a place that had been pretty peaceful.
Right, right, okay.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid. But as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.